I'm Alan Watts, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 15th of November, 2020. And hope you're all managing to hang on with your fingernails, probably, to this idea of reality, which is rapidly losing its credibility as reality, because we really are in an amazing system, a massive psychological warfare program. And unfortunately, most of the public are unaware of it. They can't imagine anything being worldwide on the scale that it is. And almost overwhelmingly, all mainstream news is really, well, just, you don't have to even look into mainstream news anymore. And that's not for many years, mind you. You can look into one radio or television station and get exactly the same news articles read in the same way, scripted. One to the other, they all get it from the same one or two sources. That's a lot of power when you think of maybe one or two sources. They're probably really just one source, really, giving all the articles out across the world for to shape your minds, because that's what it is, isn't it? It's news. It's just data, and it's planned data, though it's not incidental, except for the little trivialities of local things that happen and have no real relevance to the future. The big things are all planned that way. You truly are living in a psychological operation like never before. And it's been on the go for a long time, especially at this level, because it went into force before 9/11 happened in 2001. When all the countries, I mentioned this so many times, it's so relevant because all the countries went into the same mode at the same time, even changing the uniform of local police and national police into they're all wearing the same black clad military outfits with the pants tucked into the boots, combat boots and so on. That was a big, big shift, getting you prepared for a different kind of society where you'll be obedient. That the black uniforms traditionally are associated with the hangman or the axeman, the state registered axeman, and that's what they represent. Something that's done in the dark, you see, and is covered by the dark and so on. So really, it's nefarious, in other words, it's ominous, and it's meant to be. It strikes fear into people. It's much easier to go up to a cop when he's got kind of a white or a light blue shirt on, you know, and it doesn't have the combat gear on, etc. It looks a bit more human and is more approachable by the public, which they're supposed to be, because they're supposed to be there to represent the public and be approachable for that reason. But you can't just walk up to someone who dresses like someone who's just going into a raid by the SAS. It's rather, as I say, it puts people off from approaching them. It's not a friendly type of attitude to have. And appearance they have, so it's all intentional, that's what I'm saying. And that was happening in the late 90s, getting everybody prepared for the 9/11 coming along down the pike, including omnibus crime bills that Canada passed and other countries passed too, that literally were really arrest without trial, long-term detention, etc., which are really anti-terrorist bills. So they knew what they were going to do before 9/11 came along, as far as I'm concerned, anyway. And they even put displays on in the newspapers at the time of getting used to these new kinds of policemen. And they had a few initially from the main cities in Canada where they'd show you maybe five or six or seven or maybe eight maximum, grinning, always grinning police, you know, almost like models. It could be actually models that they use for it, dressed in combat gear. Initially they had them dressed in army green type combat fatigues, and then we said, well, what's this for? What's for? They need to get them into the city SWAT teams. Well, they already had SWAT teams and they weren't dressed for combat. And why wear green combat in the city, huh? It's not even urban combat camouflage. But so they changed their mind on that one. But they had these they said, oh, they were called out last night and gave these photo ops, all stage photo ops. These guys really posed, you know, just like models, to get used to it. So there's a happy guy dressed in military fatigues. And eventually they just decided on the black outfits, you know, because they knew they wanted to bring in a more authoritarian society. And the people would become the enemy, obviously. That's what you get in authoritarian societies. And therefore, they even had articles then, even in the little towns around Ontario, at least. And I saw the guys. I actually saw the guys, like four people walking up the streets, and I thought, this is like the models in the newspapers of the last few months, only they're wearing the black outfits now, but they're still smiling, you see. And looked friendly and smelled at passers-by. So there were, it was a PR. And sure enough, they admitted it was a PR stunt in the news, local newspapers, to get you used to the new fashion, you know, where Grimm was in, as far as I'm concerned. And that's how they put it across to the people. And now, literally, it's kind of like Robocop, the movies, the way that they're dressed, the black, and why would they have their pants tucked into their boots? That's combat. That's not police. That's not peace. That's literally combat officers. And we take these things for granted because people adapt very quickly if they're not told to worry or think about something by the big media. Brzezinski was quite right. They did all their tests way before he wrote his book in the 1970s. And he said that the media, the people expect the media to do the reasoning for them. And that's exactly what happened, even when he wrote his book before. Obviously, it was all tested, understood that with surveys and so on. The people would not get worried about anything unless the media told them to. Now, if the media, and especially their anchor people, the newscasters that were there for years, suddenly came out and told them that you should be very, very worried about, then they would be. But otherwise, they wouldn't be. That's what I noticed at the time. I thought, my goodness, it's gone this far that people literally wait to be told when to worry. And then you got a lot of fake things coming out, too, as they tested it out. Even before the internet was widespread for the public, that is, and they did all these surveys and they would put out fake things too, and tell you worried. And sure enough, you would see letters to the editors, the newspaper, and so on, jumping on board with something. That's terrible what they're doing to those young girls in Nigeria, and so on. And a lot of this stuff actually was testing. They were testing it on the public to see, using emotive type articles to get them on board with something. And for some reason, telling them you should really worry about that, you know. So you're constantly being experimented upon, and that's what the public unfortunately don't know. They think that government is this fiction where you just vote somebody in and other people come in who are voted in to serve in cabinets. And then they just decide things as they go along, all by the little selves. And nothing is such a fiction. That's an incredible fiction. Because politicians literally don't know anything about the positions they get appointed over. That's why the civil servants are so important, because they're there for life and they have specialists in each department and know exactly what their department does. So the politicians are supposedly appointed over them in order to be a kind of a gatekeeper to the public. So they're an intermediary between the civil service government and the public support. That's the farce of what they tell you is reality. And nothing's further from the truth. It's very hard to get a hold of an MP, the actual MP themselves. They're too busy watching and receiving lobbyists, you see. So it's a fiction in itself. But that's what it's supposed to be, so that civil services couldn't do whatever they wanted to without oversight by a system over them, represented by the politician appointed to the Department of Health or Department of whatever. And that's long gone, obviously. And most countries, it's probably long. I don't think there's any real democratic countries left. Not that you ever really achieved real democracy, because along with democracy, you have an open door for corruption, because mainly psychopaths go into politics anyway, especially today. You don't have the states people that are there to be kind of on guard watching and so on behalf of the public. There really isn't an ombudsman, as they used to call it, that was supposed to look over all these different positions that politicians filled on behalf of the public. They would warn the public and supposedly, or at least warn some of the politicians that were going too far with their departments. So it's kind of all gone. And quite rightly so, in a sense, from their point of view, because you're not supposed to be living in a democracy, even the countries that pretend that they are. And it's not a democracy at all. It's a fragmented special interest groups. You know, that's what they've created deliberately. And this is the substitute for democracy for all, you see. Therefore, you can't have unification of the public on any real matter at all. And that was all done deliberately. Divide, 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 divide and conquer. And then you appoint leaders for each special interest group. That even the followers that supposedly represents are scratching their heads. Or are they really representing us or not? Well, of course we're not. You're conquered, unfortunately. And the experiments of democracy were short-lived anyway. They were gone long ago, as far as I can really see. And I really do think that the agencies that work behind the scenes, the ones as an example, there are many of them, but as an example, the histories put out by Carol Quigley certainly gave you a good inkling into the ambitions of the private institutions which really governed the British Empire. And it wasn't just the British Empire, it was the American Empire as well. They handed the baton over to America to take over, as Britain was financially exhausted with all the debt that wars incur. So Winston Churchill himself, there's a book called The Whispering Gallery, I think it was, written by high-level bureaucrats and high-level civil servants. They were very important, as I say, because they really keep things going. And they all have their real in-depth knowledge of what their department does and how to fix things and so on. Whereas the politicians can get moved around and appointed. Britain's famous for it. It's like musical chairs. They just appoint so-and-so and then have a reshuffling in the cabinet, they call it. And then they'll move them around. Or you're now in charge of the Ministry of blah, 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 and instead of the Ministry of Health or whatever it is. And they keep shuffling them around. And all they do is get their reading cards basically drafted up for them for speeches by the civil servants in charge of the department that they're put over. And most of the politicians, I don't think they care what department they're put over. I don't think they've got a real care to know even what they're supposed to be doing. Because it's all scheduled, it's all written for them. It's just like public relations exercises and photo ops for politicians. When they put in well in advance, you know, requisitions to visit this town or whatever, and give a little talk or do some ceremony of opening. We used to open bridges and things. We don't have that anymore because we're all going broke. But they would have these things. Or even opening malls and big stores. That's all kind of gone too. There's only a few select big stores allowed to operate now in this democracy, of course, that we're all living in. But everything's written for them, as I say, even the speeches at those opening ceremonies, and they must, and they're guided by a whole coterie of security experts and so on, and camera and public relations experts who travel with them, just like the military. The military is anything to do with big governmental institutions has its own propaganda department, big for themselves. I'm not talking about just for using against the public, which they certainly do. But they have ones for all under military intelligence, but really as part of PR, I should say, for the public relations, which is just a newer term for propaganda, and have their film teams and script writers and things like that. And they've had them for an awful long time. I think General MacArthur, I think he's always known for different quotes. We quote him all the time for "I shall return" and things like that, you know. And he looks very resolute there with his pipe, and he's going to return. And apparently they did a few takes of that, him on the landing craft coming off, or going on, or one of the two zero coming on or coming off the landing craft. They brought it back in and out a few times to get the perfect shot for the statement and all that. And so everything is really pretty well rigged, you know, when it comes to what's dished out to the public. And the reasons are almost clandestine reasons. It's all clandestine work, isn't it? You're not supposed to really know the truth on anything because you might object. Just like Roger Bacon. Not Roger, but Francis Bacon. Francis Bacon, but Roger's another character too, mind you. But Francis Bacon, he... he gave a resume, basically, to Ronald. See, it's just like Machiavelli. Machiavelli's book is basically a resume of how clever he was for conning populations and lying to populations. I mean, he was a one-man band, Machiavelli. He didn't invent the techniques of deception and control and manipulation. As an art, and obviously a very secretive art. It wasn't taught to everybody, but it was taught to courtiers and advisors to royalty across the world. And so that also tells you there's archives of the knowledge. You don't destroy knowledge that works to do with power and accumulation and the wielding of power. It's never destroyed. And in fact, in ancient times, sometimes you'll find that countries like Rome, as I said before, would send their young off to be educated, just like they do today. But in countries that you would never think of had advanced universities. But they did. And in those universities, they found out the ways of the mind and how to control people and how to deceive people, populations, never telling the truth. As Francis Bacon said, they'll never understand, or if they understand, they'll object. And if you want to manage folk, you don't want them objecting to what you want to do to them. It's very psychopathic in itself. But we're given for us, you know, the people, the general, you know, we're all the scum and the flotsam, you see. We're not supposed to know the truth, and we're supposed to be quite content with the fairy stories of how wonderful it is. And the old movies, old black and white movies, where they give you Lincoln, they elevate Lincoln to a god. And those old movies, and I can't remember the one. They used to show all these old movies in Britain, and until you see from childhood, until your hair was going grey, because they kept using the same old movies. Because I don't think they paid any royalties on all these old movies, in Britain at the weekends and BBC, and STV, and there's one main one where you see Lincoln is going to get back on the train for the campaign, you see. And a little boy comes up to him and says, can anybody be president, Mr. Lincoln? And, oh, yes, my son. You know, you could be president if you wanted to be, you know. And that's a message to everybody that's got gullible stamped on their foreheads. And you're supposed to believe it, you see. The things just happen like that. Just like you're supposed to believe everything else you're given in reality. You're given all the output, basically, of the star-making machinery for actors, actresses, musicians, and bands, and all the fiction that goes along with the stories that are made up for them. And you believe it, you know. And you're meant to believe it, and you've no reason not to believe it, because you've been trained to be incredibly naive from childhood. And that's how you're run, you know, until eventually you have Madonna coming out and telling you what you should think about politics and the country, you know. And she used to do other things with her hands on stage, as opposed, apart from just reading scripts and things to the public. But this is what they give you. And they're star-making machines, that's what they are. There's nothing about their past life you can believe. It's all made up. A standard, you know. A show business. Show business. You know? It's a show. And the public don't realize that at all. You don't realize when you're maybe even 12 years old, hopefully, you know, you've grown up before you're 20, but a lot of folk don't. They still think right through that the groups and the bands and the singers that were put out there some to follow were real and genuine and really did all their own stuff and always and knew what they were doing. And the little bits where they would give you the group or the band, and they give you names of the guys or gals, whatever, and they'd make up histories for them and their affairs that were having and heartbreak and all that rubbish. It's all fiction. Yeah. And that's part of this. So they're not really selling you the music. They're selling you an idea, an impression, and a complete fantasy. A soap opera. That's what they sell you. And they don't show you behind the scenes of the show, of the session musicians and the writers that write the stuff and do the work, you know, and arrange it all. And then put it together and sometimes play it for them. So that's That's part of the mythology too, but it's the same with everything else in your life. The star making machinery, and I've given talks on it before. Some of the people that the Unabomber was going after, because of he claimed that the world that they were, the guy's targets were bringing in, was going to be hell on earth. That's what he claimed. And a good German documentary was put out about that, in fact, and exposed a lot of the reasons that he claimed that he was doing what he was doing. But apart from just that side of it, one of the guys who was after spoke on the documentary video that was done, and his job was at making the stars, making scientists into stars, he said, with using all the star-making machinery. And until you really believe everything the scientist says, once he just goes off the topic of what his particular speciality is, people will still follow him. He's so bright and intelligent. So if he's telling us to vote for this or do that in our lives and society, we should do it. You know, that's how easy it is to manipulate people. Quite amazing, eh? It's kind of like calling up people on the Ouija board or something like that, or a seance. Look at the history of the world. Look at the history of the world. And I'm not knocking that things don't happen. I do know that things do happen. But what I'm saying is, how folk get entranced by memes that are put out there by Hollywood, for instance, in movies and all that. And folk will dive into the occult simply because it's made to be trendy. They don't realize they're being manipulated to go along with it and to actually follow and alter their behavior even, or their thought patterns as they follow what's put out for them to follow. Many, many years ago in Britain, and maybe the world, I don't know, there was a magazine put out. I think it was called Man, Myth and Magic, I think. And it was maybe a monthly issue, I'm not quite sure it was weekly or monthly. But a lot of people, young folk, were snapping these things up. And it was just little tidbits, little mouse traps, they call it, that entice you in. You say, oh, wow, that wonder thing when you're young really grabs you and you want to know. And you do suspect there's something more to everything than just the dryness of politics, etc. It's a pity they drum that out of you too, but anyway, the Man, Myth and Magic, and I think they even sold books through it too, and you can basically, they could get big folders and put all the magazines in until you had a whole compendium of the volumes, as they called it. And that really was a big changing point, getting ready for many years later to bring in the idea through entertainment of Wiccanism, as an example. You always get prepared before something comes out. You don't realize that, but you are. You're the generation that picked for this, that, or whatever it happens to be. And at that time, they'd already planned to sow the seeds that people wouldn't realize the thoughts that they were getting weren't really theirs. They knew how you would follow things, and it programs you. You do get programmed, you know. But the Man, Myth and Magic was a big, big one for pushing on. And then, of course, years later, they bring on all different things on TV for teenagers and folk in their 20s and maybe in 30s on the occult. Lots of programs on it. And they just dive right in. They're being programmed in advance, you see. You don't know that. But that's how it's done. Big committees in countries. I've seen some committees in Britain. I've seen the ones used to decide for the BBC many, many, many years ago, really who the hits were going to be in music. And it's nothing that you'd imagine. You couldn't imagine it, the kind of panel you would see. It wasn't the disc jockeys that you would see. They're all paid well for pushing whatever. And they know how to, they smell the wind of what's to get pushed. They're given little notes on who's to get pushed, and they're rewarded well for doing it. Because it's entertainment, right? It's just entertainment. But you look into the panels that chose it. And these folk came in, and there were maybe about 25 of them. And a big table, the whole thing. And you wouldn't recognize pretty well any of them. and they had the wealthy gear on, the clothing, you know, and tweed suits, men and women, and wealthy, and the old. That was the thing too, older, you know, much older than the teenagers that when you buy all the stuff that when you promote. And they would sit there and decide with nods and winks and little guffaws, as I say. You don't just laugh, you have a kind of a bit of a guffaw occasionally when they're pushing something a bit silly. And they would decide who would be top of this and that and the other, you know. And even when that was exposed, eventually they kind of clammed up and tried to hide it even better, because they don't like the public getting a peek behind the curtain or under the cover of the tain, you know, attainment. And that's what, even the word itself is interesting, but you enter, you know, behind a curtain in a sense, like almost like a tent type thing, a tain. And they don't want you, they want you in and to be mystified, but never to figure out what's going on, because it affects your lives. And so much of your behavior is predictive programming. That's what it is. You watch it enacted, whatever it happens to be, on a social level, through dramas especially. And they say, I remember many years ago, the Bernays types, these big associations of marketers and public relations outfits. And don't forget that in Bernays' time, he called it propaganda. He had no problem calling it propaganda. And eventually they changed to public relations when the propaganda got a bad name for being bad, you know. Now it's a good name for being bad, but or a bad name for being good. I don't know which it would switch. But anyway, it is quite fascinating to see how it all works together, programming you for all the different phases in your life. You don't know that, do you? You really don't know how much program you've had through fiction. Especially when you enjoy the fiction, especially if it's a series type thing, like the series for television, where you have more time to get to know the characters as they develop the characters, and they have departments within the writers that are doing it, different script writers, but they also do character development as time goes on, and then they find out, through the, in this day and age, through the internet and likes and dislikes and all the rest of it, and suggestions, they get an idea of what's working, what isn't. Very quickly, they can add to the character until you start to like the character. Whatever was lacking is now gone, and they're a fulfilled character, and you identify with them. And such a character, then you can start writing where the script is to go off from a basic futuristic sci-fi until now the one that you like is going to take the side of whatever oppressed group or whatever it is that they're pushing and political correctness at the time. And that's how you get your mind changed, because you like the characters, you identify with them. And that's what you're meant to do. You're meant to identify with the characters. And as they change the strata of society, and because there's different levels of society in all age groups too, there's different levels of being as they keep altering what were called all kinds of norms. And so they start changing that too in the series, and you'll follow along with it too. If your main character be a male or female, you'll start to identify with the changes, and you'll start even parroting little terms that come from the shows. This is not just a happenstance, occasional thing. This is almost through everything now, and you have no idea how much your tax money goes into entertaining you, so you get programmed. You have no idea at all, especially through TV series, but also through big movies too. Why do you think every country has a department of culture? If you are the culture, why do you think you've got a department of culture? And they all sprung up really around during World War II. And then after the big handouts by the Department of Culture to all the to novelists, to children's book writers, to screenwriters, and so on. You're programmed. There's big money because your life is already decided how it's going to be. But you know, when you're born, you don't know that. I used to at one time, not for long, but I used to wonder what Stalin was on about in some of his writings, and also the people behind Stalin, the mass psychopaths, all psychopaths, these characters, you know. And you had Beria, who was in charge of at one time of the NKVD, a ruthless murderer, you know, they all were. But Beria used to host the meetings of the Comintern, the international communist parties. They would send their delegations for the different youth brigades. They would get sent off for training in Moscow from all the countries. Canada was rather famous for sending off rather famous people to that. But Beria, long ago, back in the 30s, gave that famous talk, which stuck in my head when I read it, and he talked about how it used to take a generation. Now, he meant a real generation, like 70 years, perhaps, 70 years, to program changes that would affect society, the culture in society, and have people adapt and adopt to the changes, adopt the change and adapt to them. And he said, with techniques now, this is before you had the term toolkits for teachers and all this kind of stuff. He said, with the techniques we have now, we can change and program, basically some of the programming changes in people, the youth, the youngsters, from a very early age, for major things that would happen in their lives. He didn't specify exactly what those changes would be. But if they want changes to be in their lives, they could say 15 years' time, they could get a new intake of students at the age of 5 and then program them so when that event happened 15 years down the road, they'd accept it quite naturally without thinking much about it. And that's what he said. He says, we can literally alter the changes every 3 to 5 years, I think it was, or 45 years. And a whole string of changes that person was going to experience in their life right through to the age of 50, 60, and they would never fight back to, because they would think it was quite natural. It was already programmed into them. They were big in psychology, you know, the communists, and behaviorism. And so many of the things that were learned from the communist days were brought back by people who visited the Soviet bloc countries, and you had your great admirers of the Soviet system, which puts paid to the nonsense that it was all straight-lined them against us, because why would you put all your scientists over there, your top scientists over to meet their counterparts every year, maybe once or twice a year, for big meetings so they could exchange and get to know each other and so on, and exchange views and knowledge. When any intelligence book would tell you that the Cold War would be won through by the nation that had advanced scientific secrecy and so on, and secrets. Well, why would the last people you want to share it with is your supposed enemy, and let them get access to friendly acquaintances with their counterparts in the Soviet bloc countries? So anyway, you really are living through a bit of a farce. And you always were living through a bit of a farce. And you still are. It's even worse today than it was then, with what you're told is truth and not truth, and untruth, as the other side likes to call it. So you're living through a script. Again, I go back, just before you get off this part, getting back to the idea of propaganda. That great series, that great long-running series, I call it great because I hated it. It was called Coronation Street. I don't know if it's still going or not, but the generations, I think, grew up with that Coronation Street. But every possible thing that was going to hit Britain, from unemployment, austerity, all the social changes of divorces before the divorces became normalized, and mass migration of all kinds, the reaction to mass migration, all the way you're supposed to behave and react to it was shown to you through drama scenes within the context with the characters in Coronation Street. So much so you were told how to react to different types of migrants coming in, different categories of them and belief systems and so on, and how the youth would mix with your family, you know, like all that kind of, all portrayed out in advance, you see. Quite amazing. And great detail too. And eventually they admitted that Coronation Street was so heavily financed by the government and different agencies. And also had they had full-time psychologists working with them and behaviourists, and they brought in social work departments, professionals, and counsellors for divorce, all these things to make sure it was to get the right, get the context for the dramas that they would show in their fiction, supposedly, that was going to happen before these, even the mass migrations happened. They were showing you how to react before things happened. So that was amazing predictive programming, you know. And sure enough, they know that they even know if it's easier for men or women to be manipulated, and that's always been the way too, because even Bernays talked about it, that right around after Bernays too, up into the 1970s and 80s, when magazines were, there was hundreds and hundreds of magazines, and most of them were aimed at women. And because they said the women were easier to change. And women too, through psychological evaluations, that they're more easy to program, in a sense, to try something different. Men are way more conservative in a social setting by nature. They don't like change much. But women will try the change that's promoted. Oh, this is fun, this is going to be fun, this is good for you, and they will try it. So they have a great day, a field day, testing all these things out with women, they say. And this is from the public relations books too. They still teach this yet, all the facts and the statistics, etc., of how things work. It's astonishing. That's why the United Nations, by the way, has all these programs about aimed at women across other countries. How do you start their businesses for women? How do you give them funding for women? The guys really don't exist as far as the UN is concerned. Very important, because the UN is a front too for the big global organization that runs the world. And the same organization that the WEF is on board with, and they're on board with the same direction, of course, on every particular topic, actually. Quite fascinating to see. So you realize the world that you live in is a fiction. No one's left behind, you know, because if you're alive, you've been programmed. You've all had your, and you're still getting programmed too. I used to have, I mentioned it before too, a bishop, I don't know if it's a bishop or archbishop in England in the 1940s. I remember just leafing through a book they put out there. And he was called the Red Bishop because he was communistic, you know. But he talked about this term of that shortly people would have lifelong training. And he called it lifelong education. And if you, everything's written in doublespeak in a sense, or different levels of meaning. That's how things are generally put out by people who are in the know, talking to their own group, you see, their own level or class, if you like. But he said that you would literally have lifelong learning, and of course you would just pick this up and read it. Oh, I guess he's talking about, why would you do lifelong education? He's talking about literally programming the people, and that's what it's been advocated with the United Nations since its inception. This technique of lifelong training, constantly training the people for each phase of change. So they make you feel guilty or whatever. If you don't jump into the next phase, oh, you're a bad person because of this, that, or you've got biases or whatever it happens to be. And then once you adapt into it, you see, that might only last 5 years or maybe 10 at the most. And now you must retrain you to the next phase of the world that you're going to live in, you know. And it's lifelong training. step by step, 5-year plans, 10-year plans, 15-year plans, 20-year plans, which the communists use and the United Nations still uses. So that's how incredibly precise things are. And yet we go through our lives, and up until we're all locked down with this phase of it, which was planned years ago too, and we used to just, people would come home from work and flop out in front of the TV, and then we'd get a beer or something. A lot of folk did that. And they zonked out because the stress of jobs, and boring jobs too, mainly, has its wear and tear on you, and it zonks you out. You didn't probably want anything to really be interested in, you know, if you're tired. And so you want something to be light-hearted and trivialistic. And even that they knew about you. And so everything was catered to different groups of people and segments of groups. That's why so many TV stations came out. And sure enough, you'll find your niche, you know, according to your personality type and so on. And they'll flood your mind with what appears to be meaningless trivia and light-hearted stuff or even silly stuff or very amateurish stuff. Didn't matter. Because in amongst it, just for you and your type, you see, they've got the programming in there for you as well. That's how it is. There's nothing you see in a set on TV, with the scene, you know, the set. Even in a room. It doesn't have a panel of people discussing it. That little flower on the table over there, you know. And what color should it be? What type of holder should be for that flower? And that's all discussed. The visual understanding of things is a science. Because the visual, just like hearings, is a language. And you don't realize that if you look at a particular scene in a set, you'll be directed, as you're listening to the characters, maybe talking, maybe two people talking, in a room, as an example, or outside the house, or wherever it happens to be, you're seeing it. And you don't realize, as it zooms in to the two characters before this, that your eyes have already seen certain things placed there to cue you in to that, and then something will move over to the right or the left, and your eyes wander to that as they're talking, and you don't realize there's different languages getting put across there at the same time, and your subconscious picks up, and it will influence you. You won't even know it's happening. Now with the internet, or put this way, the artificial intelligence and the visualizations and on television and the scenes and the movies, it's a field day for programming people. I mentioned before that for every penny you make, there's thousands of companies out there competing to get it off you. That's the system. That's what advertising's for. It's the same thing with reality. When you're trying to find what your own mind happens to be, you know, and you want to think for yourself and get an original thought for yourself, it's not an opinion from someone else. There's like a million companies out there and agencies and government agencies, and they're farmed out. There's more farmed out agencies than ever before. So that they're not technically responsible to the people or to politics, you know. But there's a million companies out there trying to get that thought from you, to bend it again, and so you'll take theirs and reject it so they can put their thought back into you. That's how it's done. So important, isn't it? And folk never, it's almost inconceivable again this can happen without, again, some big declaration from the voice out there coming, listening to what's going on here. You can't imagine it on such a massive scale. Everything is clandestine. Everything is covert. You're not supposed to know what's going on. Why do you think they have whole departments and levels of departments that classify, reclassify secret documents for governments and all the different agencies and all the agencies that they farm out their responsibilities to? It's not for the public consumption. You pay for all. It's all about you and how to use you, manipulate, and what they want the public to believe. But you can't see it. and you think you're free. And folks will argue with you that they're free. It's astonishing, really, isn't it? It's really astonishing. The right to think for yourself is so important. But most folk can't, especially today, because truly, with the weaponization of mass media and entertainment and the internet, you don't have much of a chance if you're going to use all these different tools to put out there that you're supposed to use, that enslave you and open you up to complete surveillance. You know? And they dissect every thought that you have. They don't have to have 100 folk working on you. The algorithms do it all and then put you into pigeonholes. I gave this talk in the late 90s. They try to pigeonhole you. They hate you if they don't fit into a pigeonhole, you know. Where's your slot? You know, I don't know. That's quite some. And that's what we're living in. But as I say, history is like that too. Also, with history, you get bits and pieces of different realities all the time. Again, going back to Machiavelli, the prince, and the writings of Bacon as well, to do with his you know, to royalty, telling him how clever he was, basically deceiving people on behalf of royalty. It's something you've got to take into account. What he did and what they did was done right up until the so-called advent of parliamentary systems, where you pretend to elect someone that's going to pretend to represent you and goes off to parliament. But it's quite fantastic to understand that kind of thing. And even going back, I mentioned it earlier too, as I was thinking about, and that little slip with Roger Bacon. Well, Roger Bacon was way before Francis Bacon, remember, it's about 11th or 12th century. Franciscan monk, who had his own laboratory. And you say, what on earth is... It's a sort of Cadville thing, Cadville, remember, that series? Is that what it is? He's making potions to help the sick. No, he was working with gunpowder, you know, to create this thing called the cannon. So, no one's ever explained how he got permission to do that kind of thing, you know. But, if you can stuff it in this tube here, and there's all these diagrams and testing and you got funding, you know, to make the kind of cannon to do some experimentation, that changed history again. So, yeah, I don't know if it's in the same family lineage, but these characters were quite some characters indeed. Now, remember, too, cuttingthroughthematrix.com website lists my sites in case any of them go down. Because I mentioned it before, I mentioned it way back, too, in February and March. This agenda is written in stone. Nothing was going to change. It was obvious from the beginning. It's a big agenda for the WEF and the Great Reset, which is a complete sustainability program, Agenda 21. And that's what it is. You see, I wouldn't even argue that. It's just so obvious. There's just too much there from the horses' mouths themselves. But in the different so-called lockdown phases, it really is to implement all the different parts that the SAGE group in Britain and other groups in the Event 201 talked about too, where they would also go after people who would speak out against. It was to bring down social media big time, and complete censorship of the internet, except for pornography. You probably watch lots of pornography and that kind of stuff. But anything that would challenge any official statement out there, especially when statements sound so insincere or bogus, there's always a lot of retaliation by the public about it, because we're not completely morons yet, you know, most of us anyway. And so they're going after people using the old-fashioned techniques of terrorizing people. And they said with the lockdowns, the different stages, they would eventually start arresting people. And that's what they do in a wartime scenario, as I say. This is a wartime scenario. This is what they came out with, a wartime scenario, to give themselves the pre-existing powers for total lockdown of all kinds and simply arresting folk. Even though that you don't have a country opposing you at the moment, you are the enemy. And you see, the war now is you. You are the enemy. When they turn loose propaganda units from the military, and all countries are doing it now openly, by the way, on their own people, you are then the enemy. You're the designated enemy, not some people over in Afghanistan that they have their minds altered and be persuaded into something. It's you now. And their own writings, by the way. It's you. Now, we're going into the psychological, we are in the psychological phase. We have been from the beginning of this whole thing. So first you get coercion and persuasion. And the next time, and then you get hammered, you know, there's people being hammered with disinformation to try, if they fall for it, they can get banned too. You see, it's all prearranged, including the dark web, as they call it, that lots of billboards put out there for them to fall into. Do you really think they just sit back and allow you to have a secret way of communication? When you, the makers, basically, the whole Silicon Valley on board with this whole agenda. Because everything in your world, all the media is on board with this. All media is completely saturated with CIA and other agencies. All this umbrella group, they're all connected. You know, this worldwide group, MI6, GCHQ, MI5, Mossad, you know, and many other organizations across the world are all one. You know. And with, of course, with the five eyes, as they call it, it's actually six. But they all share the same information. They have done since even before 9/11 happened. So you're living in a complete fiction already if you think you're still free and everything's on the up and up, etc. Nothing's further from the truth. An agenda had to be fulfilled. The elite who are the globalists, the same elite that wrote about bringing a European Union in back in the early 1900s, the same group that talked about eventually a unified Americas and a Far Eastern bloc that would be unified too, and who set up the organizations to bring it into force. The same organizations that published books about it didn't really sit back and watch the supposed populism, as they call the term now. Eh? I love the terms just come out of you know, nowhere to the public. Eh? And populism supposedly now is like nationalism, you see. And when I was young, you really just had inside a national nation. You had political parties, you had left wing and right wing and middle and all that. But it was still for the nation, as far as you would think it would be. But then as time went on, you started to notice they talked about the left and they talked about the radical right. That's what, you never got right wing anyway, it's always radical right. So, and then you realize they changed again the meaning, the definition, that if you still wanted a nation, then you were a right-wing extremist. That's what it still is today. Eh? So nothing to do with Labour Party on the left or anything like that anymore. But when they saw the populism going for Europe too, and countries getting so fed up with that monolithic communistic or bloc of the EU Parliament and so on, then they wanted out. Never mind the squandering of billions of pounds of money to the darn thing every year and get nothing back. It's totally corrupt, of course. But they want to go let it happen. This is a dream I've had for so long. By the way, getting back to countryfreemedias.com, take a list of send me a few bucks my way. PayPal's fine. Cash is fine, by the way. The mail still works awfully well. Don't register anything if you send in by mail. The online mail is the best, and it gets through faster. It does get through faster. If you start paying extra for this, everything gets checked in, and then that's when stuff might go missing. But if you send things ordinary mail, never a problem. That's how it works. So you can send cash or you can send checks. And MoneyGram too, I think, still works. Or you can get something from the bank itself. You can write a check out for you if you want ever to help me tick along here, because our days are becoming numbered. I know that. I knew this a long, long time ago, Sutama. Before I even came out to start talking about it, I knew pretty well, actually, too, the lifespan we'd have of communication via the internet. In fact, the first few years I gave talks on radio shows, I didn't even have a computer, didn't want one. Because it was, certainly was not personal. I knew what its real purpose was. It was to collect all the data on you. But send me a few bucks. You can buy the books and discs if you want to, or just straight donations are really welcome. And because we're going through the dark, dark times now. That's a new dark age, in a sense. In fact, it's more appropriate to call it a dark age, I think, really. Because all reality is being closed off, shut out. And you're given this dark, fake reality to stumble around in. And you have no idea of the powers behind it all, none at all. How big it is. This didn't just happen overnight or within the last year. This has been prepared for many, many years. So the same group, as I say, that wanted globalization. The same group that could give the speeches at the World Economic Forum about it all the time. Again, the World Economic Forum is something you don't vote for. It just created itself. And it has all this power. An oligarchical tyranny is what it is, with the richest folk on the planet in it, who've decided long ago that this was theirs, you know, all this is theirs, and you become a nuisance. I'm not kidding you. And they've got about 100 different ways of convincing you you're bad, and you shouldn't even be alive, you know. You're taking up the resources off their planet. But they've been talking this way since the 1700s. Hope you understand that. The select groups have been prattling on about this, and even in the days of Malthus, who came as a front man, an economist, who came, an early economist for the big Bank of England group in the City of London. And one day, you know, one day all these peasants will be breeding, and there'll be too many of them, and we need them for wars and for creation, the creation of a British Empire at the moment, but one day there'll be a problem, be too many folk, and we don't need them. There you go. That's my summary of it. And it's all coming out now, you see. You've had years of indoctrination that you're to blame, because you had to be the target. Oh, if you want to have, if you want someone to be suicidal, you just gaslight them for a long time. Until their mind is, you're showing that, you give them little glimpses into pathways they should follow. And they will, they'll follow these, but the eyes of logic. But you've really set it up, it's all fake. You've set them up to fall. So it's a dead end every little corner they go down. Then that, so eventually, oh yeah, I guess it. I'm no use, I can't do anything, I'm useless, I'm hopeless. So you just sit there and say, well, there's always euthanasia. It's legal now, euthanasia, you know. Some countries, like Canada. You know, you can take a pill and get rid of that depression, like they do in Holland now, eh? And bingo, there you go. Are you kidding about this? The first psychological warfare is to defeat an enemy. You're all the enemy before anything else happens. Persuasion. Look at the logos of the PSYOPs units. They had really blatant ones before they changed a couple of years ago in the States, how to persuade and alter and basically behavior modification. Right? But they used to do influence and all the rest of it to bring you to the proper conclusions on whatever they wanted you to come to without you being aware of it. Almost science in itself. Again, paid by your tax money. And you are